Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpert. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal starting on May 23rd on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Now get ready for Strange Things with Joshua P. Warren.
Welcome to our podcast. Please be aware the thoughts and opinions expressed by the host are their thoughts and opinions only and do not reflect those of iHeartMedia, iHeartRadio, Coast to Coast AM, employees of Premier Networks, or their sponsors and associates. We would like to encourage you to do your own research and discover the subject matter for yourself.
Strange Things with Joshua P. Warren.
I am Joshua P. Warren, and each week on this show, I'll be bringing you brand new mind-blowing content, news, exercises, and weird experiments you can do at home. And a lot more. On this edition of the program, a wild history of ghostly and spectral animals. I bet some of you know what a Kelpie is, but how about a galley trot? Or have you heard of a spunky? Or how about a Vulhorand? Surely you've heard of demon cats, fairy dogs, black dogs, devil dogs, old shuck. But have you heard of the horrible horseman Herne the Hunter? Well, if you don't know what those things are, or you want to know more about them and a lot more, well, you are listening to the right show right now. I can tell you that. In 2006, I published a book that I wanted to call Phantomals. Now, those are just phantom animals. I created that term. The publishers decided to call it pet ghosts because they thought pet ghosts would be more marketable. I didn't like it, but that's how it goes when you sell your work to a publisher. And don't get me wrong, the book does have lots of ghostly pet stories in it, but it also has a lot more. I mean, stories about some of the weirdest creatures you can imagine, even dinosaur ghosts and cryptids like Mothman. Well, a listener of this podcast contacted me recently and asked me if I'd ever done one of these shows about ghostly animals. And I immediately wanted to say, well, yes, of course. I mean, I've talked about that sort of thing from time to time, but I immediately said yes because I did episode 27 of Strange Things, which was called The Talking Mongoose and Amazing Animals. And then I did a part two, episode 28, called More paranormal animals. But you know what? I went back and listened to those shows, and actually, I really wasn't talking mostly about ghostly and spectral animals, one of my specialties. Instead, I was talking more about incredible abilities that animals have that we humans don't have that seem almost paranormal. And so I realized, wow, I guess I do need to focus on this topic that is so fascinating to me and to so many of you. And so I hope you enjoy what I have in store for you during this show. There is a chapter in my book called A History of Spectral Animals. And I'm going to kind of skip around and sort of read through that chapter as a guideline, adding some spontaneous commentary, but hitting the highlights, some of these most fascinating creatures. And it's really a gigantic story, the whole history of spectral animals. So let's get started. Here we go. I will point out that when it comes to phantomals, you really have two different types. You have ghost animals. And just like with people, a ghost animal could be an entity or an imprint. So an entity is an animal ghost that seems to be interactive and unpredictable and aware, kind of like a disembodied spirit. And then you have the imprint animal ghost, which seems like a recording in the environment that just sort of replays itself from time to time. But there's another main category, which I just call ghostly animals. And they differ because it seems like that they do not necessarily have to be the apparitions that appear apart from some physical form that used to exist. Like, for example, one of the categories of ghostly is what we call an elemental. Okay. This is a ghostly animal that may have never even occupied a physical body. Like, for example, some of the hellhounds, they have these, you know, features like glowing red eyes, and they're gigantic and they're vicious, and they don't look like any physical dog that we've ever seen. Another category of ghostly animals is what I call the harbinger ghostly animals. Now, these may be physical animals in our realm, but they carry with them spiritual energy. So such creatures might have been specifically charged with paranormal energy, such as a witch's familiar or a minion or a messenger of a magician's spell. Or it's possible that some creatures are simply attracted to concentrated pools of energy, either good or bad, due to some sensitivity we don't yet understand. So it reminds me of like the Amityville Horror, where when the paranormal activity was heightened, all of a sudden flies would show up around there. And so these were real physical flies, but the presence of these harbinger animals can also indicate the presence of these more paranormal energies. So it's unclear whether the creature brings the energy or is just attracted to it, but there's a connection there. And I had the misfortune of personally encountering what I think were most likely harbingers. Now, this was in the early 2000s due to a personal and professional falling out with an old friend. I felt that he intentionally placed a curse on me. This man often practiced magic and even introduced me to the reality of the subject. And so it came as no great surprise when I was struck by a long, rapid string of bad luck. One after the other, I suffered mechanical failures, cars and a well pump dying, electronic mishaps, financial difficulties, some problems with other personal relationships. And as you know, without delving deeply into magic, I believe that thoughts are as solid and physical as bullets in the long run. You can really focus that. And I think this black magician was apparently focusing some very nasty things in my direction. And it all came to a head one day when the harbingers arrived. Now, at that time, I was living in the rural Blue Ridge Mountains where I grew up. And having stayed up late, I napped in bed on a lazy Sunday afternoon. My girlfriend, Lauren, who is now my wife, rested beside me on the bed watching television, and she listened to the tube via headphones so I would not be disturbed. She laid on the bedside facing the room's only doorway with me on the opposite side. At one point during my shallow slumber, I heard strange sounds like a crisp plastic being crinkled. It was finally so distinct that I awoke and I tugged on Lauren's sleeve and she slipped down the headphones and I asked her if she'd heard any kind of a weird noise. She was kind of nonchalant, said she may have heard some slight noise, but then, you know, she just replaced the headset and returned her attention to the television. Now, here's one of the weirdest things about how this began. So here I am half asleep, satisfied with her response, and I rolled back over to continue napping. And at that point, something extraordinary happened. It's the only time I recall anything like this happening to me. A voice spoke to me, and the voice said, very calmly, "There is a snake over there." The voice was unfamiliar, sort of androgynous. I opened my heavy eyelids, leaned toward the side of the mattress, and I was horrified to find a thick black snake, easily 6 feet in length, only inches from my face. His cold eyes stared directly into mine, body length pausing in mid-slither, heading straight toward me. And instantly I sprang forth cursing, amazed and dizzied by this sight. The sound of the crinkling plastic was from his length passing over some thin plastic bags on our floor, like some grocery bags we had some stuff in. Well, for the next 10 minutes, this epic battle ensued. I wrestled with this snake. I mean, at the moment our eyes locked, this struggle became clear to us both. And this thing, this serpent, hissed and struck repeatedly. The musky stench of his reptilian fear oozing in the air. And though such snakes are not venomous, I understand their mouths are full of rotting bacteria and their strong teeth are so curved and sharp that once lodged deeply in flesh, the creature often cannot even pull its own diseased mouth from the prey. So trying to escape, the snake would shoot under furniture and I'd grab his tail, whipping him back out, and his muscular arched form striking at me again, scales shining. Eventually, thanks to the help of a long gripping mechanical device, you know, one of these things you use to remove objects from high shelves, I got a hold on his neck, dumped him in a trash can, and hurriedly, trembling with adrenaline, I rushed outside of this house. We were out in the middle of the woods, and I got rid of him. So I was just sort of a nervous wreck. Can you imagine waking up to that? So here I am. I walk back into the house and wait till you hear what I saw when I walked back in. It still gives me shivers thinking about that experience. Oh my goodness. So many stories you're going to hear in this particular podcast on this topic. You know what? I recently did a really amazing experiment that has changed my life in a positive way, and it caused me to produce a new product. But I didn't talk about it on this show because some things I only share with people who sign up for my free e-newsletter. So I just blasted it on my free e-newsletter, and that's how people found out about it and got to take advantage of this new product. And I also did post it on my Facebook page, but that's it. So don't just rely on the podcast if you want to know what I'm up to when you have an opportunity to do some cool stuff or participate in things or find out about a new product. To be a part of that newsletter, just go to joshuapwarren.com, and right there on the homepage, it says something like sign up for Joshua's free newsletter. You click the link, it takes you 2 seconds, you put your email address in there, you hit submit, you will instantly receive some online free gifts and an automated email from me, and then you can stay informed and you'll know what's really going on behind the scenes. JoshuaPWarren.com. That's me. You're listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network, and I will be right back.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Strange Things coming right up.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/strangethings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/strangethings.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, the Coast to Coast AM YouTube channel is waiting for you now.
Go to coasttocoastam.com for more information.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is George Norrie, and you're listening to the new iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Now let's get back to Strange Things with Joshua P. Warren.
Welcome back to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. I am your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, beaming into your wormhole brain from my studio in Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada, where every day is golden and every night is silver. Agiatato zume! Upon my return to the house, Lauren and I were a nervous wreck, especially because I woke up to this drama. I went to the bathroom on the opposite end of the house to wash the snake's stench from my hands, and then I heard Lauren shriek. Oh my God, there's another one! Popping my head out of the bathroom, I could not believe my eyes. As a child, I remember weathered old-time mountaineers speaking of snakes with a seasoned hatred, saying if you bother one, another will come along to avenge it. But sure enough, less than 10 minutes, whether that's true or not, here we go. A second black snake
was slithering in from the opposite end of the house. To this day, I'm not sure how they gained access, but here I was. For me, it was back to square one. Same kind of struggle ensued, ended with the same result. I finally got the snake outside. And you know what? Having personally handled them, I can assure you they were physical creatures. And yet, once the initial shock of the event wore off, I was struck by many extraordinary qualities of the encounter. I mean, for days after that, I just assumed that it must have been Lauren's voice that told me a snake was slithering toward me, even though it didn't sound like her. I mean, she was the only person there, so I just thought it was a warning from her. That would be natural. But she heard me recount my experience to others and was surprised and said that she had not given any kind of warning like that. She didn't know that the first serpent was there until I sprang up after seeing it. So whose voice gave me the warning? I do not know. Could that have been an angel whispering in my ear? Why were there two snakes? Why did the first one, perhaps having traveled through the entire house, slither right past Lauren's side of the bed and go straight for me? And to compound the complexity of the situation, in discussions reflecting on the event, it was revealed that the physical position of the second snake, in terms of its body's orientation to the room, appeared different to each Lauren and me. So there are all of these bizarre aspects to that encounter. And just so you know, I utilized after this some ceremonious exercises to deflect the curse back to its source. And things quickly improved in my life. In fact, if you are like, wait a second, Josh, what did you do? How did you do that? Well, go back and listen to episode 81 of this podcast called Strange Things. That is called If You Are Cursed. You'll get all kinds of recommendations on how to deflect a curse. Episode 81, If You Are Cursed. So I was never plagued again after this. And that's why you can see why I felt like these may have been some kind of harbingers. Now, one of the oldest and certainly paranormal documents is the Holy Bible. Only a couple of pages into the book in Genesis 3, a serpent acting as the instrument of Satan is portrayed as completely altering the fate of mankind, diabolically tempting Eve to eat forbidden fruit against God's wishes. We all know how that story goes. What's even weirder, though, is that in the description there, the story implies that snakes once may have had legs or even wings, because the story says God penalizes the creature by proclaiming, quote, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field, and upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life, end quote. This is very bizarre because it implies the serpent somehow, you know, participated in the process of conducting the devil's wishes, hence the punishment there. There's a lot of perplexing stuff about snakes and serpents in the Bible. Snakes are used again early in the Bible for important roles that kind of contradict the symbology of Eve's encounter. In Exodus chapter 7, Moses confronts the tyrannical Pharaoh, demanding freedom for the Israelites. And to demonstrate his divine power, God instructs Moses to toss his staff on the floor before the Pharaoh, transforming it into a serpent. Now, Moses does so, and the royal sorcerers duplicate the feat with their rods. However, Moses' snake then devours theirs, and the creature turns back into a staff. So as the story proceeds, the staff is used as the symbol of God's power, because Moses is told to incorporate the instrument when triggering miraculous events, like turning all of Egypt's water into blood. So in this case, the serpent is apparently worthy to represent God's will. And there are all kinds of other miraculous things that Moses does with his staff, the staff that can turn into a snake. These kinds of situations with Eve and Moses may be some of the earliest scenarios differentiating an animal from a pet. No sense in getting into all that. But regardless of the creature's presence in this physical realm or some intangible dimension, in Genesis, the serpent is cooperating with some entity, Lucifer, and in the Exodus story, the serpent is cooperating with God. Very peculiar. There are other phantomals in the Bible, but despite the Bible's overwhelming fame, many scholars consider the oldest known manuscript to be the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's a sweeping adventure in Babylonia based on earlier Sumerian legends. And not only does it include a prominent ghostly encounter, but the entity is that of Enkidu, a hairy, man-like creature similar to our modern concept of the Sasquatch. And Enkidu is an animal because he was not identified as a human, and yet this beast could speak, and we could sort of think of him as a phantomal at very least, because he returned from the dead to visit with his old friend, the great King Gilgamesh. Another really bizarre story that's very old with this concept of the phantomal. But the ancient culture applying the most extensive spirituality to animals may have been the Egyptians. They believed a variety of gods and goddesses occupied particular species or species hybrids. For example, dog-headed baboons represented Thoth, the god of writing, and Khonsu, the moon god. Crocodiles exemplified Amut, who punished evildoers. But a sacred animal especially associated with the afterlife was the cat. Whether wild or domesticated, they were called Miu or Mi, which means he or she that mews. Simple enough. Thousands of cats were mummified to facilitate their existence in an afterlife. In fact, the creature was so sacred that according to scientists at the Natural History Museum in London, X-rays reveal that many cat mummies had their necks intentionally snapped to expedite journeys to the other side. That's an unfortunate irony for a beast being considered sacred. Though literature from the African Middle East is some of the most popular and well-recorded, less specific tales originate from most parts of the world. Chinese astrology is famous for its association between animals and spiritual characteristics. Creatures like dogs, rats, goats, and monkeys are used to exemplify theoretical personality traits. The only one used today that we are not familiar with is the dragon. Does that give the dragon more credibility, being that it was grouped with animals that we know to be real? You know, dragons respected in Asian culture for thousands of years can clearly be called phantomals. They are serpentine beasts that can fly and breathe fire, often considered auspicious. And even though it's so prominent in Asian cultures, even the Bible mentions the fire-breathing dragon Leviathan. In Job 41, it says, out of his mouth go burning lamps and sparks of fire leap out. Out of his nostrils goeth smoke, as out of a seething pot or cauldron. His breath kindleth coals, and a flame goeth out of his mouth. He maketh the deep to boil like a pot. He maketh the sea like a pot of ointment. In modern times, we know of no animal that can breathe fire. Certainly a phantomal characteristic. Ancient Americans strongly based their culture on the appreciation for animals' mystical traits. They see animals as windows to the great spirit, each type offering different views as exemplified with totem poles. Totems are the spirits that manifest through animals, such as power through the bear and planning via the squirrel. Various aspects of life are facilitated by these invisible forces. Perhaps one of the most chilling apparitions in ancient American culture has been the Wendigo. And this beast blurs the line between humans and creatures. Wendigos are hairy giants that were once normal living persons. However, these people died, at very least in a spiritual sense, after resorting to cannibalism. Such a horrible practice transformed them into deformed, bloodthirsty animals similar to the European concept of humans becoming vampires. And just as vampires can shapeshift into other creatures, such as bats and wolves and owls, well, wendigos can shapeshift, even back to their original human form. We gotta take a break. When we come back, did you know that there was this belief in wendigos so strong that it apparently inspired a real serial killer? I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. And I will be back after these important messages.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Joshua P. Warren and Strange Things coming right up.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Coast to Coast AM mobile app is here and waiting for you right now. With the app, you can hear classic shows from the past 7 years, listen to the current live show, and get access to the Art Bell Vault where you can listen to uninterrupted audio. So head on over to the coasttocoastam.com website. We have a handy video guide to help you get the most out of your mobile app usage. All the info is waiting for you now at coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. Heard on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your favorite shows.
Welcome back to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is the show where the unusual becomes usual. Supposedly, when seen in true form, a Wendigo, these shaggy monsters have glowing eyes, long yellow fangs, and extended dripping tongues. And this spectral animal's relationship to humans places it in a special category, as is so often the case in these ancient tales. You know, it's noteworthy that even in modern time, belief in Wendigos has been so strong as to inspire serial murderers. Jack Fiddler, a Canadian Cree Indian, claimed to have killed at least 14, quote, Wendigos in his life, and was tried in 1907 for the murder of a woman in his tribe. He and his son said she was, in fact, a Wendigo, but Fiddler was imprisoned for murder at the age of 87. Such instances reinforce the connection between ancient culture and even present ideas regarding humans and animals. You know, the Australian Aborigines revered animal spirits as much as other ancient cultures, applying mystical meanings to creatures, especially those visiting in dreams. The Yowie was a mysterious, hairy, animal-like spirit that represented death. Its specific origin is unknown, but in Tasmania, a more familiar type of phantom has been reported near the Richmond Bridge. There, a hulking black dog haunts, and he appears at night when potentially vulnerable people, like petite women or small children, intend to cross and escorts them over safely. And after the helpful canine meanders off, he just dissolves into the evening air. These stories about black dogs are especially prominent in Europe, though, and they are well recorded in the Middle Ages and the Victorian era. So let's move up to that stage of history, shall we? Of course, understandably, in ancient lore, specific kinds of animals are not always clearly identified. But due to the invention of the Gutenberg printing press in 1456, some of these stories from the Middle Ages through Victorian times are some of the best early documented accounts clarifying these creatures. As in the ancient Egyptian civilization, cats played a prominent role in that era. The idea of cats being associated with spiritual evil was greatly enhanced by the publication of a book called the Malleus Maleficarum. You've heard me talk about this before. That's called The Hammer of Witches. It was published in 1487. The authors were a couple of Dominican Catholic friars, and they helped spearhead the witch hunting craze of the 15th through the 17th century. This was the handbook. You see, during that time, sales of this book were only exceeded by the Bible, which the Bible says, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live." And up to millions of people may have been tortured and killed due to the influence of the Malleus Maleficarum as a handbook for finding these witches during the Inquisition. And in this book, cats are often directly described as possible tools of the devil. There is this one story, for example, I'm going to read it a section verbatim. A workman was one day chopping some wood to burn in his house. A large cat suddenly appeared and began to attack him. And when he was driving it off, another even larger one came and attacked him with the first more fiercely. And when he again tried to drive them away, behold, three of them together attacked him, jumping up at his face and biting and scratching his legs. In great fright, and as he said, more panic-stricken than he had ever been, he crossed himself and, leaving his work, fell upon the cats, which were swarming over the wood and again leaping at his face and throat. And with difficulty, he drove them away by beating one on the head, another on the legs, and another on the back. So that's a passage from that book. But it goes on to say that after the incident, the workman is suddenly arrested by town magistrates and thrown into a dungeon. And days later, a judge accuses him of beating these three women, respected women in the town. And the astonished man says, well, I remember that I struck some creatures at that time, but they were not women. And then he goes on, and I won't read all this to take me forever, but he goes on to convince everybody that he didn't beat these women. These women had transformed into witches. These women were witches who transformed into cats. And it says in this handbook here, they use the phantasm of a cat, an animal which is, in the scriptures, an appropriate symbol of the perfidious. You know what that means? Perfidious means tending to betray. And then it goes on to say, just as a dog is the symbol of preachers, for cats are always setting snares for each other. And the order of preaching friars was represented in its first founder by a dog barking against heresy. So in this book, when they said that cats are perfidious, tending to betray, but dogs are, you know, they're helping out, they're on the good side, that's where that like rivalry between cats and dogs really began historically. And what you find is that obviously all throughout European culture, evident to this day, there's this connection between traditional sorcerers and cats, especially, you know, black cats, long thought to harbor bad luck. Unfortunately, they're popular targets sometimes for Halloween tricks. And it's no wonder that cats and dogs are not only our favorite pets because they've gotten so much interesting attention and they're so useful in so many ways, but also they're associated with ghostly activity. But of the two, dogs are most often mentioned as apparitions from this period. To this day, the most famous canine apparitions in Europe are those of the United Kingdom, especially what they call the black dogs. That's a general term for shadowy, canine-like creatures often accompanying doom. And the concept was especially popularized in the Sherlock Holmes mystery, The Hound of the Baskervilles. Hound of the Baskervilles, written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, an author who publicly upheld a lifelong interest in the paranormal. And these creatures can fulfill a wide variety of purposes, from revenge to protection to omens. In his 1913 book called Animal Ghosts, author Elliot O'Donnell makes the following important statement. He says, quote, as to what class of spirits the specter dog belongs, that is impossible to say. At the most, we can only surmise, and I should think the chances of its being the actual phantasm of some dead dog or an elemental are about equal, end quote. In other words, we can't say for certain whether these phantoms are the products of once living canines or originating from another realm altogether. Personally, I suspect they are indeed elementals because they're often larger than usual dogs and exhibit behavior apparently driven by purposes transcending mere survival instincts of a normal animal from our realm. Some particular examples are the fairy dogs from the Highlands of Scotland. These are large dogs with short tails and long feet, and are actually a mossy green in color, despite the popular moniker of black dogs. And these fairy dogs appear to be guarding a cavern of some sort on the Isle of Tiree and bark three times before viciously attacking. Therefore, obviously, no one can say what happens past the third bark. The idea of these beings as foreboding guards is a common theme also exhibited by the galley trot. Galley trots are tall, eerie specters that appear as hounds walking upright, sometimes with body parts seeming human-like. They are most often seen around ancient European burial grounds or sites of hidden treasure. As is such, or as is usual with these beings, a sighting is considered a freakish omen of death, so observers usually flee in terror. And we therefore have little information about such beings, but they are sometimes dressed in human clothes. They may even be capable of speaking, and they are certainly different than any ordinary creature on our physical planet. Well, my friends, I'm going to pause right now because I believe we're going to turn this into a two-part podcast. We still have some great stuff to go as we move through the years. I'm about to get into hellhounds and spunkies and Volharounds and Hearn the Hunter. But I've got one more segment left in the show. And so what I want to do when we come back is I want to read at least one or two emails I got. I received an email from a man who is a listener, and he's a police officer. And he had he said emotional experience just days ago that he thought I should share with all of you that gives some insight into the way reality works. And so I'm going to read that when we come back. But when I do the next show, next episode, next week of Strange Things, well, it'll just be a history of spectral animals part two. I had a feeling that was going to happen because the history of spectral animals is a big history. It's a giant story to tell. So when we come back, I'll read the listener emails. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. And I will be right back.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Strange Things coming right up.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com. Over 5 years ago, George Norrie approached me with a unique concept, a dating site for people searching for someone with interests in UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, conspiracy theories, and the paranormal. From that, ParanormalDate.com was born. It's a unique site for unique people, and it's free to join to look around. If you want to upgrade and enjoy more of our great features, use promo code George for a great discount. So check it out. You got nothing to lose. ParanormalDate.com.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's producer Tom of Coast to Coast AM, and more of The Wizard of Weird starts right now.
Final segment of this edition of Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren. And I think this book that I published in 2006 called Pet Ghosts, Animal Encounters from Beyond the Grave, I think it's one of my more interesting books. It's 230 pages long. You wouldn't believe how much content is in here. If you go to Amazon.com and just search for Pet Ghosts and Joshua P. Warren, you should be able to find the book on Amazon today. But as I said, next show we will continue with the history of ghostly and spectral animals. But I wanted to definitely get to some listener emails. This comes to me from a man who is a police officer, and he's corresponded with me before, so I know who he is. But he's active. He's an active police officer, so he doesn't want his name to be used here in this story. And I also know where he lives, but I don't want to say that either. He's in one of the northern states here in the U.S. He writes, in our previous correspondence, I mentioned that I have been involved in law enforcement for over 20 years. A few years ago, I wanted to go back to the village where I had begun my part-time career. Although I had left in good standing, they decided they could not bring me back at the time. This was very disappointing, but there was nothing I could do about it. In August of 2023, I decided to go talk to the chief of a neighboring village with a population of about 800 people, and he gladly welcomed me, and I started helping out immediately. Well, this past weekend, while on regular patrol, a young man ran to my cruiser. His truck had just been stolen from the local store, and his 2-year-old son was in the back seat. I immediately gathered as much info as I could and got all the adjacent agencies involved looking for the vehicle. Shortly after this, I got confirmation from an eyewitness, and then we got a location on his cell phone that was still in the truck. Well, we immediately converged on the location that was 5 miles away, but to our disappointment, the phone had been thrown out of the truck. At this time, we spoke to the eyewitness and got a description of the suspect. And then a lady from town called in and said she needed to speak with an officer and might have information for us. Myself and a state trooper went to her house and obtained a description of the man who was visiting her brother. And her description matched that of the eyewitness, and now we had a name. We started to head back to the area where the phone had been tossed to look more. On the way there, a camera 22 miles away got a hit on the license plate of the truck.
Myself and the state trooper proceeded to the location as fast as we could. 5 minutes away from arriving, we received word that, he gave the name of a town police, another town's police there had the child, and he was safe, and the suspect was apprehended. I got to the child and immediately called his mother, and the two of them were able to FaceTime and see each other. He was checked out, and I very happily drove him back to his parents. From the time his dad approached me to the time I had the child in my arms was exactly 2 hours and 10 minutes. Things always happen for reasons unknown to us. Had my old department taken me back, I would not have been where I was this weekend. Things may have turned out the same, but I like to believe I was there for the reason of being able to get information out immediately and getting all the nearby law enforcement agencies involved for a quick and happy ending. And he also points out, I want to be clear, this was not all me. It was 100 plus officers from a dozen different agencies all working together to make this happen. Everyone played a role. Wow. I applaud you, sir. Thank you. I can't imagine the horror of the parent or the parents knowing that some scumbag stole the car and the car is not even what you care about. The most precious thing is the child in the back. I mean, that's just, I'm so glad that had an amazing happy ending. And, you know, I watch a lot of these true crime shows, and I don't know how realistic some of them are, but they seem like they're pretty accurate in many cases. And it seems like that most of the time, if you're going to crack a case, the most valuable thing you can have is some witness who comes forth and says something. You know, that's even better than like fingerprints or DNA or cameras. You know, so if you see something, you know, don't be afraid to speak up. You know, one of the great things about your message, sir, is that it gives me an opportunity to say to people that when you're using manifestation tools like a wishing machine, sometimes I warn people, be very careful not to wish things for other people. Because sometimes what seems like a bad thing that's happening to a person is actually a good thing. So let's say somebody gets sick. You know, we've heard these kinds of stories like, oh, I was going to go on vacation to Orlando, but I got sick and I couldn't go and it sucked. And then it turns out that the airplane that I would have been on crashed and everybody died. You hear these stories a lot. So sometimes bad things, things that seem bad happen to you to actually protect you in the long run. And I think it's different wishing for yourself. You're the captain of your own destiny. Do all you want to wish for yourself and your visions of what you want out of life. But when you start wishing for other people, you just cannot know all of the circumstances. And there's a big difference between you know yourself, I think, therefore I am, and you trying to understand what's going on in another person's head or life. So it's just one of those stories that you have to keep in mind if you're going to start manifesting things. You never know what the big picture is. You're not able to always see the big picture. So thank you for that message. I also received this message from Dawn in Wisconsin. She says, good day, Joshua. She bought an Electrum ring and she said, I am so pleased with my ring. So far, I've noticed interactions go more smoothly. I am a massage therapist and for the last 27 years really can't wear rings. This past Saturday after work, I put it back on and I noticed drivers were extremely friendly and courteous on the road and at four-way stops, giving me the right of way when clearly it was their turn. And during my workday, I've been putting the ring on a necklace to keep it close. Last night, I had to pick someone up afterwards. It was after 9 when I left. What should have been 20 minutes ended up being over 60 minutes of driving around, getting lost, being in some sketchy areas. The person's phone was dead, so I couldn't call. At some point, I realized I forgot to put the ring on my finger, and I regrouped, put on the ring. I connected to the elements, put on the GPS, and decided to go home. And that's when the pickup person managed to give me a call and everything sorted itself out. She says, anyway, the purpose of me writing this is, are you going to have other Electrum products coming out? and she goes on to inquire about that. She said, so far, I've even had some luck with scratch-off tickets. I just like the energetic feel from wearing the ring. Thanks, Dawn. You know what? Thank you for sending that feedback, Dawn. That's a very interesting question. You would not believe the overwhelming positive feedback that I have received from people who just absolutely love the Electrum ring. And so I am talking to the artisan about the possibility of creating some other Electrum products. And as I mentioned not too long ago on a podcast, I also am soon going to be giving marching orders to everybody who owns an Electrum ring. We are all going to work together to try to manifest some really great stuff for the world. That's part of the project. Getting the Electrum ring is step one. And now we have all these people, hundreds of people all over the place who have an Electrum ring that they got from joshuapwarren.com. And soon I'm going to contact all of you and say, you're wearing an Electrum ring, but you are part of a group, an elite group of manifestors that we call the Electrum ring. And we're going to work together and we're going to start making some amazing stuff happen. And so, I'm just really excited about that. So if you own an Electrum ring, stay tuned. I have some amazing stuff in store soon that only you can participate in. All right. Well, we've had a lot to think about as usual on this edition of the show. So now it's time to try to make your next week the best week ever. Take a deep breath. If you can, close your eyes. If not, that's perfectly fine. But I want you to just meditate for 20 seconds on the original, the one and only, the famous Good Fortune Tone. That's it for this edition of the show. Follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren. Plus, visit joshuapwarren.com to sign up for my free e-newsletter to receive a free instant gift and check out the cool stuff in the Curiosity Shop, all at joshuapwarren.com. I have a fun one lined up for you next time, I promise. So please tell all your friends to subscribe to this show and to always remember the golden rule. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon. You've been listening to Strange Things on the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
Well, if you like this episode of Strange Things, wait till you hear the next one. Thank you for listening to the iHeartRadio and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.